Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. And you know, today we're going to tackle a case that really focuses on trademark law in the weight loss industry.
Really fascinating stuff.
This is a case about Nutrisystem and Constant Industries.
Yes.
So kind of a battle of the bulge trademark dispute.
It is a battle of the bulge.
And sometimes these cases get a little wild, but this one is no exception.
Yeah, you've got these two companies, right? And they're both in the weight loss business, but they have really different approaches.
Right.
So you've got Nutrisystem over here, and they've got their kind of structured centers and their personalized plans.
Right.
Really targeting like a premium market, like those middle income women willing to invest in like a full structured program.
It's a service kind of experience.
Yeah.
And then you have to Constant operating as NutriTrim.
Right.
And they're taking a more grassroots approach, community meetings, more affordable products.
Totally
different vibe and price point.
Yeah.
But both using Nutris in their name.
Right.
And that's where the legal drama kicks in.
Exactly. And here's where it gets even more interesting. Constant had actually been using NutriTrim since the 1960s for various health products.
Oh, wow.
So that's long before Nutrisystem even existed.
Wow.
They came on the scene later, rebranded in 1980, and then launched this huge national ad campaign in 81.
Huge.
Yeah, claiming that Constant's NutriTrim was infringing on their service mark, which they argued they established through all that advertising.
Okay, so hold on, back up a sec. For those of us who, you know, don't geek out on trademark law every day.
Sure.
What is the difference between a trademark and a service mark?
So a trademark protects a brand name or logo used for goods.
Okay.
So like think like a clothing brand or a type of food.
Got it.
A service mark does the same thing, but for services.
Okay.
So think airlines, hotels, anything you hire someone to do.
Right.
But here's the thing. The legal test for infringement is the same for both.
Okay.
Thanks to the Lanham Act.
So it doesn't matter if you're selling sneakers or weight loss coaching, the same rules apply.
Exactly. So even though Nutrisystem poured millions into those ads, building up recognition.
Right.
That didn't automatically mean they had like an airtight case against Constant.
Okay. That's where it gets really tricky because I feel like, you know, a lot of businesses have similar names.
Right.
So how do the courts decide if there's infringement? Like, what are they really looking at here?
So it all comes down to the likelihood of confusion.
Okay.
So the courts look at whether consumers would likely be confused about which company is behind the product or service.
Right.
Based on the similarities in the names or the marketing.
Okay.
And they use a multi-factor test to analyze this.
Okay, so break it down for me. What are these factors?
Okay, so there are five key ones.
Okay.
The first is the strength of the mark.
Okay.
So basically, how distinctive is the mark? Is it totally unique and memorable?
Right.
Or kind of just descriptive of what the company does?
So like Kodak, which is a made-up word, versus Nutrisystem, which kind of tells you what they do.
Exactly. And a stronger, more distinctive mark usually gets more protection.
Okay.
And the court said that Nutrisystem is a suggestive mark.
Okay.
Hinting at the service, but not as unique as like a totally made-up word.
Interesting.
So inherently weaker.
Okay. So that's strike one for Nutrisystem. What about the second factor?
So the second factor is the similarity of the marks.
Okay.
So here the courts look at how the marks look and sound and like the overall impression they give.
Okay.
And, you know, in this case, the logos were pretty different.
Okay.
Constant had their own distinct logo and they used Trim instead of System.
Okay.
Which kind of created some separation.
So even though they both use Nutri, the overall branding was different enough.
Right. And don't forget, Constant had been using Nutrier for ages.
Right.
And that history matters to the courts.
Okay. So I'm starting to see how this is more than just, you know, comparing two words side by side.
Right.
So what's the third factor on this list?
So the third factor is about the marketing channels and how close the goods or services are.
So the court looks at how the companies market their products or services and if they're targeting similar customers.
Right.
More overlap means a higher chance of confusion.
So if they're both advertising weight loss programs to the same group of people, that's a problem.
Right. But in this case, Nutrisystem and Constant had pretty different approaches.
Right. We talked about that.
We did.
Different business models, different everything.
Exactly. Dedicated centers versus community meetings, different price points. That matters.
Right.
And the court saw that as evidence that their target markets didn't really overlap that much.
Okay. So this isn't looking great for Nutrisystem so far. Tell me there's some hope for them. What about factor number four?
So the fourth factor is intent.
Okay.
Did the defendant Constan intentionally try to trick people or capitalize on the plaintiff's reputation?
Right.
Were they being shady?
Were they trying to ride Nutrisystem's coattails?
Exactly. But remember, Constan had that long history with the Nutri prefix.
Right.
They weren't like a new company trying to pull a fast one. They had a legitimate history with the term.
Okay.
It's like that old saying, possession is 9/10 of the law.
Right.
The court saw that as good faith.
Okay.
No sneaky intentions there.
Okay. So no bad intentions.
Yeah.
We've got four factors down. What's the final piece of this puzzle?
So the fifth and final factor is actual confusion.
Okay.
Did consumers actually get these two companies mixed up?
Yeah, that seems like it would be the most important piece of evidence, right? Real-world confusion?
It's definitely powerful evidence. But here's the thing. Even though Nutrisystem had over 650 centers across the country,
wow,
over 2 years, they only documented 8 possible cases of confusion.
8? That's it?
That's it.
Out of all those customers?
Right. And the court basically said that 8 isolated incidents weren't statistically significant.
Wow.
Not enough to prove real confusion was happening.
Okay, so that's a tough break for Nutrisystem.
Yeah.
So after considering all 5 of these factors, what did the court say? Did they side with Nutrisystem or Constan?
Drumroll, please. The court ultimately sided with Constan.
Really?
No infringement.
Wow. Even though they were using kind of a similar name.
Right. So the court said that while the names had similarities,
yeah,
the other factors tip the scales in Constan's favor.
Uh-huh.
So the weakness of Nutrisystem's, mark the distinct logos, the different marketing channels, Constan's good faith, and that lack of actual confusion,
yeah,
it all added up.
So what's the big takeaway here for our listeners?
It really shows how trademark law isn't always straightforward.
Right.
Just because a company is well known doesn't mean they automatically win.
That's a great point. And I think, you know, there's some really interesting legal twists and turns in this case.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, you know, beyond the final decision, what are some of the procedural details that would be relevant to our lawyer listeners?
Yeah. So one key thing to remember is the importance of diligence during the discovery phase of litigation.
Okay.
So Nutrisystem tried to gather more evidence of confusion by requesting customer surveys from Constan.
Okay.
But they didn't ask until super late in the game, and the court wasn't happy about it.
So they waited till the last minute.
They did.
Okay.
And the courts really expect parties to be proactive in gathering evidence. Mm. They're not sympathetic to these last minute requests.
So don't procrastinate on discovery, especially if you need that evidence to prove your case.
Exactly. And remember, in trademark infringement cases, the burden of proof is on the plaintiff.
Right.
So it's not enough to just point out similar names or logos.
Right.
You need solid arguments and evidence to prove that likelihood of confusion.
Okay. So you really have to build that case from the ground up.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up part one of this deep dive, you know, are there any broader implications of this case that you think our listeners should think about?
Yeah, definitely. This case really highlights how difficult it is to protect a weak mark.
Right.
Even one that you've spent millions advertising.
Right.
It's a reminder that a descriptive or generic brand name can be a real liability.
So the lesson is, choose your brand names, carefully avoid anything too generic or descriptive.
Exactly. And we'll dive deeper into that in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay, great.
But for now, I'll leave you with this. If you think choosing a strong, unique trademark is crucial for businesses in general, how much more critical do you think it is in a field as competitive as weight loss?
That's a great question.
Think about it.
We'll be back with more on this case after a short break.
Welcome back. I'm so excited to dig deeper into this Nutrisystem versus Constan case.
Me too. It's like a tack book example of what not to do when you're building a brand.
It really is. And it kind of drives home that point that, you know, having a solid trademark strategy from day one is essential.
Right. You don't want to be playing catch up later on.
No.
I can imagine the legal headaches would be a nightmare. So let's talk more about, you know, building a strong brand identity. What should businesses be thinking about beyond just picking a unique name?
So it's not just about being unique. It's about understanding the different levels of trademark strength.
Uh-huh.
You know, the court kept saying Nutrisystem's mark was suggestive. Well, there's a whole hierarchy of trademark strength, and suggestive marks are actually pretty low on the totem pole.
Really? I would have thought that a name that, you know, kind of hints at what you do is a good thing.
Right.
Why is suggestive a bad word in trademark law?
So think of it this way. A suggestive mark requires the consumer to use a little bit of imagination to connect the dots between the name and the product.
Okay.
It hints at the benefits, but it doesn't explicitly state them.
So Nutrisystem suggests it has something to do with nutrition, but it doesn't scream weight loss program in the same way that, like, Jenny Craig does.
Exactly. And that subtlety actually weakens the mark.
Interesting.
Descriptive or suggestive terms often get used by a bunch of companies in the same industry.
Right.
It's hard to claim exclusive rights to a word that everyone's already using.
So it's like trying to trademark the word delicious for a food brand. Good luck with that.
Exactly. So the more unique and arbitrary your brand name,
yeah,
the stronger your legal protection.
Okay.
Think about brands like Exxon or Spotify.
Right.
Totally made up words.
Right.
Instantly recognizable, distinctive, super easy to protect.
Right.
It's like choosing a plot of land in the middle of nowhere. No boundary disputes.
I like that analogy.
Okay.
Okay, so ditch the dictionary and embrace your inner wordsmith.
There you go.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier that the court saw Constan's long history with the neutral prefix as a sign of good faith. Why is good faith so important in these trademark cases?
Because it speaks to the defendant's intentions.
Okay.
Are they innocently using a term they've always used, or are they being sneaky and trying to steal someone else's thunder?
Right. It's about fairness. Nobody likes a copycat.
Exactly. And in this case, Constan had been using Nutrifix for years. They weren't some Johnny-come-lately trying to cash in on Nutrisystem's success. Yeah. They had a legitimate history with the term.
Right.
It's like that old saying, possession is 9/10 of the law.
Right.
The court saw that as good faith. No sneaky intentions there.
So history matters. It's interesting how the court, you know, weighed all these factors.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as just comparing two names side by side.
Absolutely not. And it really highlights the importance of thinking about your brand holistically. It's more than just a name and a logo. It's about creating a unique identity and experience that resonates with your customers.
So everything from, like, your marketing materials to your customer service plays a role in building that brand identity.
Exactly. It's like building a house. A strong foundation is important, but you also need solid walls, a good roof, and all those details that make it a home.
It's all about the details.
Yeah.
So businesses need to focus on, you know, crafting that brand experience that really stands out from the crowd.
You got it. It's about being memorable, not just legally sound.
Right. Okay. And then you mentioned documentation. I feel like this is something that we talk about all the time.
So important.
On the show, but it's so important.
Yeah, keep records of everything, how you're using your trademark, your marketing efforts, any instances of potential confusion.
Right.
If you ever end up in court, you'll be glad you did.
It's like building your case file before you even know you need one. Okay. Any other legal nuggets of wisdom from this case that our listeners should be aware of?
I think it's important to understand that trademark law doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's part of a larger legal ecosystem.
Right.
So, for example, you have other intellectual property rights like copyrights and patents that can intersect with trademark law.
So a company might need to protect its brand name as a trademark and its logo as a copyrighted design.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or they might have a patented invention that's also like a key part of their brand identity. So it's important to think about all these different aspects and make sure you have a comprehensive legal strategy.
So it can get really complex. Sounds like it's always a good idea to talk to an expert, but that's a conversation for another deep dive.
Another day.
Now, before we wrap up part two, I want to circle back to something that we touched on earlier. You know, the role of advertising in trademark law, it seems like it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
It is.
It can build brand recognition, but it can also potentially weaken a trademark.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. It's one of those legal paradoxes.
Right.
On one hand, advertising is essential for building brand awareness and associating a mark with a specific product or service.
Right. It's how we know what to buy.
Exactly.
But how can too much advertising be a bad thing?
So imagine a brand that becomes so popular that its name becomes synonymous with the product itself.
Okay.
Think like a Band-Aid for adhesive bandages or Q-tips for cotton swabs.
The brand becomes the generic term for the whole category.
Exactly. And when that happens, it can be really hard to enforce your trademark rights.
Wow.
Competitors can argue that the mark is no longer distinctive and that consumers don't associate it with one particular brand anymore.
So it's like the brand becomes a victim of its own success.
Yeah.
Too much fame can be a bad thing.
It's a tricky balance. You want to build brand recognition, but not at the expense of your trademark protection. It's like walking a tightrope.
So how do businesses find that sweet spot? How do they harness the power of advertising without, you know, accidentally genericizing their trademark?
That's the million-dollar question. And we're going to dive into some strategies for doing just that in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay, great.
But for now, I'll leave you with this. Think about all the brands that you encounter every day.
Okay.
How many of them are using their trademarks correctly in their advertising? Are they always using the trademark symbol? Do they avoid using the brand name as a verb or noun?
Okay.
Pay attention and see what you notice. It might surprise you.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I feel like we've been talking a lot about theory. So let's get down to brass tacks here.
Yeah.
What are some practical steps businesses can take to protect their precious trademarks?
Okay, so it all starts with being proactive even before you launch a new brand or a new product.
Okay.
You've got to do your homework.
Homework meaning?
Trademark searches. Okay. It's like checking to see if your dream house is already occupied before you move in.
Right.
You want to make sure your chosen name isn't already being used by someone else.
To avoid those awkward confrontations later on.
Exactly. And these days, you have some options. You can try DIYing it with those free online databases like the USPTO's search system.
Right. Sounds tempting. But is it risky to go it alone?
Those free tools can be a good starting point, but they don't always catch everything.
Right.
A professional trademark attorney has access to specialized databases and expertise that can really uncover potential conflicts that you might miss.
So they're like those professional home inspectors who can spot the hidden termite damage.
Exactly. They can also advise you on the strength of your mark and help you develop like a smart strategy for registration and protection.
Okay, so let's say I've done my due diligence. I found a unique name and I'm ready to make it official. What's next?
Okay, so time to file that trademark application with the USPTO.
Okay.
And yes, there's a little more to it than just filling out a form.
Okay.
You need to provide detailed information about your mark, what it represents, how you'll use it, the whole nine yards.
Right. Sounds like a job for a professional, especially if you're not fluent in legalese.
I wouldn't recommend going it alone on this one. Trademark. Attorneys, they are pros at navigating that application process and making sure everything is in order.
So they're like those Sherpas who can guide you through the treacherous mountain passes of trademark registration.
You got it. But here's the thing. Even after you file your application is published for opposition, it's like a public comment period where other businesses can object if they think your trademark infringes on their rights.
So it's not over till it's over. What happens if someone does object?
That's when things can get tricky. You might need to negotiate with the other party or even go through a legal battle to resolve that dispute.
Okay. Sounds like it's a good time to have that trademark attorney on speed dial.
It is.
Okay. So let's fast forward. I've dodged the opposition bullets. The USPTO gives me the thumbs up, and I'm officially a trademark owner.
Woohoo.
Do I just kick back and relax now?
Not quite. Protecting your trademark is an ongoing process. It's like tending a garden. You need to nurture it, weed out any problems, make sure it stays healthy and strong.
Okay. I'm intrigued. What are some of those trademark gardening tips?
So first rule of thumb, consistency. Always use your trademark correctly and consistently.
Meaning?
Don't get lazy with the trademark symbols, that little TM or that R. They make a big difference. And always use the same spelling capitalization font every single time. You really want to create a clear and consistent brand identity.
Okay, no jazzing things up.
Got it. No jazzing things up. Consistency is key for building that strong trademark. And speaking of staying vigilant, you also need to keep an eye on the marketplace.
Right.
Regularly check online, social media, industry publication, you name it. Make sure no one is using a similar mark without your permission.
So be a trademark detective. What happens if you find someone infringing?
Document everything. Take screenshots. Gather your evidence. Contact your trademark attorney. ASAP, don't let those infringements slide.
Be proactive. Protect your brand. Okay, what else should we be thinking about to keep our trademarks safe and sound?
Don't forget about renewals. Trademark registrations aren't forever in the U.S. They're valid for 10 years and can be renewed indefinitely.
So set those calendar reminders, because letting your trademark expire is not a good look.
It's not. It's like forgetting to pay your rent. You could lose your precious property.
Yeah. Okay. So before we completely wrap things up, I want to touch on something that I think is really important. It's the concept of fair use.
Okay.
Are there times when you can use someone else's trademark without getting into trouble?
Absolutely. Fair use allows limited use of a trademark without permission from the owner for certain purposes.
Okay.
It's a tricky area of law, but there are some common scenarios where it applies.
Okay.
For example, using a trademark in news reporting commentary or even parody is generally considered fair use.
So if I'm writing a blog post about the weight loss industry, I can mention Nutrisystem without fearing a lawsuit.
Exactly. As long as you're not using the trademark in a way that suggests endorsement or affiliation and you're not trying to profit from it, you're likely covered under fair use. Think of it like quoting someone in a research paper.
Okay.
You're giving credit and using it for informational purposes.
Okay, what about using a trademark in comparative advertising? Is that fair use?
So that's usually allowed as long as you're being truthful and not misleading consumers. Comparing your product to a competitor's using their trademark is generally considered fair game.
So you can say my product is better than brand X, but you can't make false or deceptive claims.
Exactly. But remember, fair use is a nuanced area of law, and there are a lot of factors to consider when in doubt. Always consult with your trusty trademark attorney.
They're like our legal guardian angels. Well,
If
I think we've covered so much today.
we have.
From choosing a strong trademark to navigating the registration process, understanding fair use, we've really delved deep into the world of trademark law.
We have. It's been a fascinating journey.
It has, and hopefully our listeners are feeling much more equipped to protect their own brands and avoid those costly legal battles.
I hope so.
I know, I am so. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.